This is 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge and WRKF.org. I'm Amy Jeffries. The state legislature has convened for the 2014 session. The official gavel sounded about an hour ago. More than 1,500 bills are being introduced as we speak. The House Speaker is rattling them off one by one. And once that's finished, the senators will join the House in the chamber for a joint meeting, and Governor Bobby Jindal will deliver an address to the joint meeting of the House and Senate. LSU political scientist Kirby Goidell is here with me in the WRKF studio. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So what does the governor need to accomplish with his speech to the legislature today?
Well, I think what we're looking at is he's going to come out and he wants to claim credit for some of the economic development activity that's happened, and the fact that Louisiana is outperforming the region and the national economies, at least in terms of unemployment numbers. And so he wants to take some credit for that. And then he also wants to set forth his agenda, which looks to be fairly thin and focused on workforce development.
Yeah, workforce development has been what he has identified as his top priority. Specifically, as part of his budget, he's pushing for a new $40 million fund to incentivize colleges and universities to partner with private industry in the state to create training programs in high demand fields. So is that $40 million significant?
Well, $40 million is not a lot out of a $25 billion budget, but I think it's more symbolic about where he thinks the state is and what he thinks his administration needs to focus on at this time. And there's also not a lot of money to go around. So if you're looking for money, you don't have a lot of options to start brand new big projects, especially if you're not looking at increasing revenue. So that's what's available.
Right. And certainly he will be already some of his critics in the legislature have been pointing fingers at the way in which the Jindal administration has put together the budget, once again using some one-time funds and using other dedicated funds as pass-throughs for operating expenses.
Yeah, he's really got to worry about how he uses money. He's been criticized before. He'll be criticized again for sort of smoke and mirrors in terms of his budgeting process and how he crafts these things and puts them together. It's going to be an ongoing struggle in order to identify funding sources for programs that he wants and not have to make additional cuts in the areas that he said he will protect.
Right. Last year, this group, the Republican Fiscal Hawks, emerged as a group that was really taking issue with budgeting and making sure that there was a sound fiscal policy in the state. One of those representatives, Brett Guyman, has already proposed a measure that would prohibit any governor, including Jindal, from using specifically the Coastal Restoration and Protection Fund as a pass-through for operating expenses. So he's going to hear this one.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there are going to be a lot of criticisms about where he's getting the money and how he's developing the money and how he's developed the budget how he's going to make sure that it all works.
Does that point to deeper fractures in the Republican Party in the state and specifically for the support for this governor?
Yeah, I think it does, absolutely. And I think one of the things that's really important from the Republican side is they believe the rhetoric of smaller government, of government doing with less and government being fiscally responsible. And there are a lot of them who believe that very strongly. And so they've taken action in order to make sure that the state budget reflects those values and not using the one-time money as much. And that presents a real problem for Jindal, who has also been on that side of the particular issue. But when it comes to governing and putting together a budget, sometimes you have to do these things in order for the government to function without more significant cuts to areas that people really care about, like education, higher education, healthcare, beyond what we've already seen.
Right. And there has been this perennial problem where there are a lot of dedicated funds in the state budget, and that has sort of tied the hands of lawmakers to exercise more discretion about how to utilize funds and put it where perhaps it's needed more.
Yeah, when we look at the amount of money that's actually available versus the money that's already dedicated, it's only a small proportion of the total budget. And so there really isn't as much leeway in terms of the ability to move money around as we often think. We go, oh, there's a $25 billion budget. Of course, we can just take money and put it into the priorities that we really care about. But that's not always the case, because a lot of that money is already spoken for. It's already It's already occupying a line in the budget.
Right, and there's even been some talk that perhaps we need to revisit the Constitutional Convention and, and do that again to kind of wipe out all of these dedicated funds and start over.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you believe that policymakers should have discretion over how decisions should be made and what the outcomes are, then I think that that's a proposal that needs to be taken seriously. I don't know about constitutional conventions, but certainly revisiting some of these restrictions so that budgeting can be more sensible.
Right, but this is not a fiscal session, so there'll be lots more that gets talked about. Governor Jindal has put his name next to bills supporting veterans, cracking down further on human trafficking, as well as restricting abortion. There's a bill that would do something very similar to what has been shutting down abortion clinics in Texas. So what is his aim with that? What is the governor's aim in terms of putting his name next to these sorts of bills?
Well, we all know that he has national ambitions, and I think they all fit within the framework of thinking about how to sell himself as a conservative Republican at the national level, restricting abortion access, making sure to take on an issue like human trafficking. There have been a number of issues in the past that are high visibility issues that maybe are often more symbolic than real, where he's focused on crime or on internet related sexual material, and so those issues fit into the image that he's trying to build as someone who tackles these social issues in an important way.
The governor is addressing the joint legislative session today. Both the House and Senate will be on the floor when he speaks in the House chamber. But the last speech he gave was a national one. Last week he was speaking at the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, and that is something of a showcase for Republican presidential hopefuls. Jindal, I take it, is among them.
He is among them. I wouldn't put him in the top tier of candidates. He's not up there with Rand Paul right now or Chris Christie, and Marco Rubio has been falling, but you would also probably put him in a tier above Jindal. But he's in that sort of second tier of candidates who are possibilities somewhere, and he's in the mix. He's not in that elite group of first tier candidates who you say are highly probable to run and also will have a strong case to make as president. But he's certainly someone to keep an eye on.
So they do a straw poll every year at the CPAC conference. This year, Jindal came in 10th among possible presidential candidates. What does that say for his prospects at higher office?
I don't think it says a whole lot. I mean, this is an activist group. It's an important group in the sense that it really identifies. It's a component of the base, and so it's important to Republicans. But it's not a good predictor of overall success. We're not really getting into Iowa and New Hampshire. If I were Jindal, I'd be a whole lot more worried about some New Hampshire polling that has him at like 4% and not very well known. And if you move into Iowa, I'm not sure he would rate very highly at this point. But the key is for presidential elections is to really focus time on those early states and to be able to spend some time there and generate some support. The CPAC poll, I wouldn't put a lot of faith in. On the other hand, and one of the reasons that it's interesting is we all know that if he had won it or if he had done better, then his PR people would have been going, look at how awesome we did at the CPAC poll.
Right.
We're making our mark. This is a sign of how well we're doing politically. So it is interesting from that standpoint, but it's not something I would put a lot of stock into as really important. The fact that he was on the stage, the fact that he got to make his case, is probably more important than his 2%.
Rand Paul's people are doing the celebrating right now.
Yeah. And he actually, he looks to be really interesting now with the problems that Chris Christie has had and other candidates sort of falling by the wayside. Rand Paul is sort of there. He's got a natural base. He's got name recognition thanks to his father's campaigns over a number of years. He's someone to really kind of watch out for. And also interesting because he's a little bit more in the libertarian camp of the Republican Party, a little bit different than some of the social conservatives. So he also stands out a little bit in terms of the direction of the Republican Party. And I think this is an election year. The next election cycle is an election cycle where Republicans are going to have to think about whether they continue in the same direction or not.
So if it's not the CPAC straw poll, to what extent does the governor's accomplishments in Louisiana, in the governor's mansion, in the governor's office, give him credentials that he could run on in a national office?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and it's sort of a mixed record in some ways. I think that Governor Jindal and his economic development team can point to some really good objective evidence, especially on the unemployment numbers, and say, look, we've done better than the regional averages, we've done better than the national average, and the economy here has done pretty well. His critics will say that that's due to factors other than the policies and what's gone on politically, but those types of numbers are helpful in terms of pointing to a record. I think some of the other issues that we'll see come up, some of the education reform numbers, he can claim some success, but what happens if it's pushed back in this legislation or as it has been pushed back in terms of courts? And so his overall record, when you say, what's the achievement that lasts? Is Louisiana better today than it was when Governor Jindal took over? There are a number of questions there.
Yeah, some of the calling cards for his time in the governor's office are being questioned, are going to be redebated, really, this session, especially the overhaul of public education that passed in 2012. That was the package of legislation that made major changes to teacher tenure and teacher evaluation processes, that expanded the private school voucher program statewide, and that also made it easier to open charter schools. And there was an expectation that there would be a big rush of charter schools and other kind of school choice options. That's another big calling card for him. So to what extent is he going to have to use his political capital to defend education policy, for example?
Yeah, I think he is. I think there is no question that there are two things that he wants to do at this point in his tenure as governor. We all know that his popularity has declined over time. His power is waning. His time in office is going down. Legislators and other political elites, say a John Kennedy, for example, are increasingly willing to criticize him on a number of different fronts. And so he's not as
the state treasurer you're talking about.
Yes. And so he's not as powerful as he once was. So he is partly in a protectionist mode, partly in a sort of I need to define my legacy here to make it clear what accomplishments that I've had, but also to protect those accomplishments. And I think the school issues are a part of that.
Yeah, those were very controversial when they passed in 2012. If I remember correctly, some of the major components of that legislation were passed at the wee hours of the morning after many hours of debate. I mean, 6 or 7 hours of debate on the floor went well into the next day. Even they had to reconvene officially in order to continue the discussion. Are those policies, teacher tenure, changes to the voucher program going to be controversial in the same way again?
I think they remain controversial because it's not clear that the effect has been to improve the educational outcomes in the school system, and I think that's the real challenge. When you take on an issue, and he was very ambitious with his school reform package, regardless of what you think about it, this was an ambitious effort to reshape and restructure what public education in Louisiana looked like. But the ultimate sort of conclusion, the ultimate factor that's really important is: are schools better today than they were, you know, when this educational package was adopted? I think there's some evidence to suggest that they are, but there's also there's a lot of concerns out there about have we really seen the level of improvement, and do we leave the schools better off today than when this reform package was taken? And that's where the controversy is, because if the evidence is overwhelming, if the governor is overwhelmingly successful and people go, wow, we were against this, but it really worked, then it's no longer an issue. It's an issue because people aren't convinced that it's leading to the outcomes and the expectations that were built in. If we take this, we'll have a better system.
And the governor did strong arm in getting some of this passed in the first place. He even sort of displaced several committee chairmen who weren't going along with his initiatives on education. And reshuffled the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education as well to make sure that this all kind of went through. Some of the legal challenges that happened in the state Supreme Court had to do with the technical problems in the way in which it was passed, and it was by a very narrow margin at the end of the day. Does he have the votes that he had in 2012?
Well, one, it's easier to defend something than it is to pass something in the first place. So once it's in place, you know, politics gives an advantage to the defense, and so the governor in a protectionist phase has some advantages that he wouldn't have if he were trying to pass it today. So if you're so the two sort of answers is he still powerful as someone who can defend his reform package? Yes. Will it be difficult to displace his reform package? Yes. Would he be able to pass the same reform package today? Probably not.
Right. And there'll be another education fight that may come up strongly this session, which is around the Common Core, this set of national educational standards or benchmarks for students as they go through K through 12. And that's going to come up. And there's been a little bit of a discord between the state superintendent, John White, and the head of the BSEE board, the president of the BSEE board, Chaz Romer, both of whom have been Jindal allies in the past. They've been standing up for Common Core, and Jindal has backed off from it a little bit.
Yeah, this is one of the most fascinating issues that I think that I've seen in a lot, because it puts together such an interesting coalition of conservatives who believe that Common Core is an effort to take over of the national government, to take over local school control, and liberal, more progressive forces looking at the school choice, looking at the Common Core as an effort of business to come in and take over curriculum. And both of them opposed, both of them very adamantly opposed. But then also this effort at national standards, which is also getting, it really divides existing coalitions, parties, and preferences in an interesting way.
You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Special coverage of the State of the State speech. We're expecting Governor Bobby Jindal to address a joint meeting of the state legislature in just a few moments. He has made his way into the chamber and was just shaking hands with a number of lawmakers. And now we are hearing an invocation happening before he makes his way all the way to the podium for his speech. Let's listen in.
And one desire to serve you and to place nothing above or before you. May our desire to serve you enable us to see you in the faces of those that we're called to serve. Help us to realize that in service of our people, we serve you. Help us to see you in every age and every stage of life among those created in your image and likeness. Let us see you in the disabled and those who are most vulnerable in need of our protection and concern. Help us to see you in the young searching for security and among the elderly who are searching for care and comfort. Let us see you among the homeless who are longing for shelter, and among the confused who are longing for clarity. Let us see you in those who've been marginalized or addicted or incarcerated, who depend upon us for help and safety. Never let the opinions of others, nor the social trends of the day, allow us to abandon your law for either our will or our popularity. Heavenly Father, you have allowed us and our people have chosen us to work for them, to guard, to guide, and to protect them. Therefore, give us the courage of our convictions. Let our belief in you guide our decisions. And never let political expediency replace our moral compass. Never let a wishbone replace our backbone. In doing this, may we make our state a place where your law is upheld and your people are given the dignity of being children of God. All this we pray through our Lord Jesus Christ, who lives and reigns forever and ever.
Put me on. This is 89.3 WRKF. You're listening to special coverage of the opening of the 2014 legislative session. We're hearing now an invocation, and we're awaiting the governor to take the podium and make his address to the legislature. I'm Amy Jeffries, and I'm here with LSU political scientist Kirby Goidell. We are listening into the speech with you. We're expecting the governor to lay out his plans for the legislative session, which will include some Economic Development, Workforce Development Initiatives, as well as defense of his major accomplishments during his tenure in the governor's office, including the education overhaul passed in 2012, and possibly also defending some changes to state retirement and rejection of Medicaid expansion under Obamacare. So we are awaiting that speech now, and it looks that the lawmakers are doing the Pledge of Allegiance. Let's listen in.
Indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
The Honor Guard is walking through the chamber of the State House at the moment. It's a joint meeting of the State House and Senate in the House chamber, and they will be addressed.
It is my high honor to present to you the governor of the great state of Louisiana, Honorable Bobby Jindal.
Thank you all very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, statewide elected officials, members of the House, members of the Senate, family, friends, fellow Louisianians, thank you very much for that warm reception. Thank you for coming to Baton Rouge today to start yet another session where we come here to do the people's work. It's hard to believe that it was just 6 years ago we started working together. At that time, we had a Louisiana where our sons and daughters were leaving the state to pursue their dreams elsewhere. We had a state where we were lagging the country when it came to economic growth. And I want to thank the men and women of the House and the Senate of this legislature for your hard work. I want to thank you for tackling ethics reforms as one of the first priorities, as your first priority, so that we move from the bottom to the top of those good lists. I want to thank you for coming back and getting rid of taxes on debt, on new equipment, on utilities, passing the state's largest ever income tax cut in our state's history. I want to thank you for following that up by coming back and working on workforce training, so now that we've got the top-rated workforce training program in the entire country. I want to thank you for passing historic education reforms, so now we have one of the largest school choice initiatives in the entire country. We've got a record number of our kids graduating from high school. We have dramatically fewer failing schools in our state. I want to thank you for your hard work transforming our healthcare system through Bayou Health public-private healthcare partnerships. You have saved the taxpayers of Louisiana hundreds of millions of dollars, but even more importantly, you've dramatically improved the quality of healthcare for our people. And there's so many other initiatives and reforms. I want to thank you for your hard work. What are the results of these laws, these reforms, these policy changes? Well, the result is our economy has grown 50% faster than the national economy these last 6 years. The result is here in Louisiana, we've now announced over $50 billion in economic development projects, over 80,000 new jobs coming into our state. The result is, in Louisiana, we broke records not once but multiple times last year for the number of people working in Louisiana. Our per capita income ranking is now the highest that it's been in 80 years. The result is, in Louisiana, we have more people here working than ever before. We've got more people living here than ever before, earning a higher income than ever before. And that bears repeating. We've got more people working in Louisiana than ever before, more people living here before, earning a higher income after 25 years of losing our sons and daughters. For the last 6 years, we've had more people move into Louisiana rather than leave our state. Now, I'd love to spend all day just citing statistics and numbers and facts about how well Louisiana has done thanks to your hard work, but instead of doing that, I'd like to share some stories. I'd like to actually share with you some examples of real-life people who have benefited from your work and from your reforms. Sons and daughters of Louisiana who are doing well in our state thanks to what you've done to create a new Louisiana. A native of Winfield, Matt Purser left Louisiana in 1998 to pursue a job opportunity in Dallas, Texas. Over time, Matt wanted to return to his home state to be part of a community like the one where he grew up, but only if a job opportunity were available. And that's when he heard about Crest Industries. A leader in the electrical transmission and distribution sector, Crest Industries has experienced solid growth from its headquarters in Pineville. Matt applied with Crest, and he returned home to Louisiana last year. Not only is he back with family and friends in our great state, but he's enjoying his career with a Louisiana-based company poised for more growth. As Crest Industries' mobile executive, he hit the ground running, contributing to both of their latest announcements and investments. They announced a 70-job galvanizing plant in Tangipahoa Parish and a new expansion at their Pineville headquarters, which will create another 90 new direct jobs. We are thrilled to have Matt home. Matt is here. I'm going to ask Matt to stand. Let's give Matt a great round of applause for returning home to Louisiana. There's also Maurice, Louisiana native Jason Picard. He has more than 25 years of experience in the aviation industry. Eight of those have been with Bell Helicopter in Lafayette. Since 2006, he worked at their component and services facility in the Lafayette area. Even though this provided steady employment, he couldn't help but wonder if there were better opportunities out of state. As an avid hunter and fisher, Jason hated the idea of parting with his Louisiana home, especially if it meant being away from the food, the culture, most importantly, his friends and family. But he was looking for new opportunities for his career, no matter the zip code. Last December, we announced that Bell Helicopter is going to build its new helicopters, the Bell 505 Jet Ranger X, at a new helicopter assembly facility at the Lafayette Regional Airport, creating 115 new direct jobs. As a customer sales and support account manager for Bell and Lafayette, Jason now has new opportunities with Bell right here at home. He doesn't have to leave Louisiana to pursue his dreams. Jason's here with us as well. Jason, please stand up. Let's congratulate Jason on his ability to find his career right here in Louisiana. Laura Miller is a native of San Jose, California. Having completed a tour of duty as a soldier in the United States Army and now a member of the Army Reserves, Laura was recruited by Danos to serve as project manager for several special projects. Today, she's managing the construction of their new headquarters, which we announced in May of 2013, that will create 325 new jobs. With her friendly neighbors and a low cost of living, Laura is particularly impressed with the optimism she finds in Louisiana. She's come to discover that in Louisiana, if you work hard, you apply yourself, you can find a great job. And I might add, she says, finding a job, especially the one that pays well, is much easier here than in California. With her new life in Louisiana, she's able to afford her own home. She's enrolled in the MBA program at Tulane, which Danos is contributing towards. And she's pursuing her dreams right here in our great state. Laura, I want to thank you for your service to our country in uniform. I want to welcome you to Louisiana. Laura is here with us. Please stand. Let's recognize and congratulate and thank Laura for her service. With more than 20 years of experience in the pulp and paper industry, Art Boyle was looking to make a career change into the renewable energy sector. When Drax Biomass announced the creation of a $120 million wood pellet facility in Bastrop, Art was hired on to be the plant manager. In August of 2013, with his wife and four sons, Art left Oklahoma for new opportunity in Louisiana. Art says he can't imagine a better place to pursue his career, especially given the incredible potential for Northeast Louisiana. The abundance of timber and other natural resources in the area provide an ideal environment for the success of the Drax Biomass facility. As the facility prepares to come online, Art's helping to organize a job recruitment fair in the coming months to pull from the talented workforce in the area to fill even more great jobs. Art is here with us today. Art, please stand and welcome to the great state of Louisiana. Let's congratulate Art. Highly skilled in technology, Randall Franklin has worked at CSC, a leading Fortune 500 technology company, for almost 10 years in Texas. A few weeks ago, we announced that CSC will establish a new technology center at Bossier City's National Cyber Research Park. The company is going to employ 800 people in cloud computing, cybersecurity, big data, and application modernization. One of those people is going to be Randall. As hiring manager, he is accepting applications from highly skilled, talented people who may soon be his colleagues. He's been a lifelong resident of Texas. But now, Randall and his family have moved to Bossier City to start a new chapter as Louisiana residents. Randall is here. Randall, if you please stand. Randall, welcome to Louisiana. We wish you the best on your success with CSC. A New Orleans native and U.S. Marine Corps veteran, Earl Burroughs serves as the material supervisor for MECO, his employer, for the past 25 years. Earl was a longtime resident of St. Bernard Parish, but because his home was destroyed by the hurricane, he and his family relocated to Texas. Earl was fortunate to stay with MECO, and he worked with MECO facilities in both Stafford and Sugar Land, Texas. MECO founded in New Orleans 70 years ago, and true to its Louisiana roots, committed in 2012 to create 127 new jobs in Mandeville, along with new fabrication and office facilities. I'm proud to announce that just 3 weeks ago, Earl and his family sold their home in Katy, Texas, and they closed on a new house in Hammond, and they'll make their official move back to Louisiana next month. Earl is here. Earl, if you'd please stand. We're honored to have you back. Thank you also for your service to our country. In August 2013, AAR Corporation announced a 750-job aircraft maintenance, repair, and overhaul operation at Chenault International Airport in Lake Charles. At AAR's Indianapolis facility, avionics leader Robert Corbello expressed to his employers he would be an ideal candidate for a transfer to their new facility in Lake Charles. As a 1987 graduate of South Cameron High School in Creole, Louisiana, he was eager to leave the snowy winters of Indiana and return to his hometown of Lake Charles. In October 2013, he did just that as AAR Corporation's avionics lead for the Chenault location. Thanks to AAR's investment in the state, he can now enjoy a stable career that supports his wife, Roxanne, and their young daughter, surrounded by his extended family in his hometown. Robert's here. Robert, if you'd please stand. Welcome home. We're glad to have you back in the great state of Louisiana. Jordan, San Diego, New York, Tokyo, North Carolina, and Baton Rouge. All of these are places that Dima Gawi, the manager of talent development for the new IBM Technology Center in Baton Rouge, has called home. After IBM announced their new 800-job technology center in downtown Baton Rouge in March 2013, Dima proudly joined the team in August and helped with the company's startup and logistical matters. Having traveled all around the world with IBM for several assignments, Dima says Baton Rouge is a place she most quickly felt at home. Dima is here with us today. Dima, if you'd please stand. Welcome to the great state of Louisiana. These men and women, some from Louisiana, some coming to our state, from Texas, from Oklahoma, from other states, they couldn't have found opportunities. They couldn't have found the path to pursue their dreams in this great state if it hadn't been for your reforms. If you hadn't revamped the ethics code, if you hadn't cut taxes, if you hadn't committed to balancing the budget without raising taxes, if you hadn't reformed education and invested in workforce training, they wouldn't be here. But it's not just about them, it's about thousands of other Louisianians wanting to pursue their dreams in this great state. And so we mustn't become complacent. We're not here just to look back and declare victory. We've got challenges ahead of us. And first and foremost, one of the most important things we can do to make sure that other Louisianians can continue to pursue their dreams right here at home and others can come and move to this great state is to make sure we provide the training. We provide the skilled workers so that businesses can continue to expand. We must educate our children, our people, with the skills they need to thrive in this modern economy. And that's why we propose in our budget to increase overall funding for higher education by over $140 million, with specifically $40 million in the WISE Fund, so we can help to train our students and do the research necessary to continue to grow our economy. And that's why we also want to work with you on JumpStart to make sure that our students, even in high school, before they get to higher education, have a chance to get the technical training they will need to fill those tens of thousands of new jobs coming to our state. So our first and most important priority must be to make sure we have got the best trained, most skilled, most productive workers you'll find anywhere in the world. It is good that we've cut taxes. It is good that we've got a predictable regulatory environment. But I'm convinced the states and the countries that have the most skilled, most productive workforces are the states and the countries that will do best in this modern economy. The second thing that we look forward to working with you on is that I know many of you have worked with other stakeholders to file bills and work on reforms to make sure that Louisiana has got a predictable and a fair legal environment. We've got to crack down on the frivolous lawsuits just as we cut taxes and ease the regulatory burden, just as we've invested in workforce training. We've got to make sure we've got a predictable legal environment, a fair legal environment, as the next step to making Louisiana the best place to create good-paying jobs and to raise our families. We've got other initiatives we're working with you to serve our veterans, to protect innocent human life, but I want to highlight just a third area third priority as we work together this session. Every year that I've been governor, we've worked together to protect the most innocent victims in our state, those that have been victimized by sex offenders and others. This year, we come to you with an aggressive package to crack down on the awful crime of human trafficking. Now, many of us, when we hear about human trafficking, we think of places all over the world. We think this is a horrific crime that happens in other countries. This is a crime that happens in the United States. This is a crime, tragically, that is happening in Louisiana. Too many victims feel like they're voiceless. Too many victims are suffering today in silence. My commitment to you is we will work together to give voice to those victims. We will work together to give relief to those victims. We will work together to sound a loud, loud message that help is on the way. And to those that dare to try to victimize our women and our children, they'd better not do it in the state of Louisiana. I'm sure there are other issues we will work on together. The most important thing is we remain committed to making Louisiana the best state in which to raise a family and find a good-paying job. As I close, I want to do something a little unusual for me. I want to tell you a personal story. You know, my parents are here every year that I've given my remarks to you. My parents have come. My in-laws have come. My beautiful wife has come. Maybe next year when I'm giving my last remarks, I might bring the kids as well. But I want to tell you just a story about my parents for a minute as I close. You know, because to me, they're my heroes. Growing up, if you'd asked me, I'd say my parents are my heroes. And many of you heard me talk about my dad in particular, one of nine kids, the only one that got past the fifth grade. But the reason I say my parents are my heroes is that decades ago, my parents came from halfway across the world to find opportunity in this great state. My mom was a student at LSU. My dad came with his pregnant wife. There were no cell phones back then. There was no internet. They didn't know anybody in Louisiana. They had never been to America. But this is what amazes me. They had confidence. They had this conviction. If you could get to Louisiana, if you were willing to work hard, you could create a better quality of life for your pregnant wife, for your unborn child, for the children that might come later. You could create a better quality of life. You could get here if you were willing to work hard. What I love about their story is they get here not knowing anybody, and my dad opens up the Yellow Pages and starts calling company after company after company looking for a job. I don't know if it took days, I don't know if it took hours, I don't know how long it took. But eventually there was a guy from a railroad company that took a chance and said you could start work on Monday. This is what I love about my dad, and I love about this story. Because if you've met him, you know, you've seen his enthusiasm, his energy, and his confidence. He tells his new boss, who he's not even met yet, he goes, that's great. He said, now look, I don't have a driver's license, I don't have a car. So he tells his new boss, who he's never met, you're going to have to pick me up on the way to work Monday morning. And the guy does. But what I love about their story is that absolute, unshakable, that conviction, that faith, that confidence. If we can get to Louisiana, if we can get to America, if you're willing to work hard, your children can have a better quality of life. They left their family and friends behind, and they have spent their adult lives right here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And the reason I ran for office in the first place was I want their grandchildren, I want my children to be able to pursue their dreams right here in this great state. My parents came from halfway across the world. I don't want their grandchildren to have to leave this state to pursue those dreams. I want your children, I want your grandchildren. I want the children, I want the grandchildren of Louisiana to have that same unshakable conviction and confidence that in Louisiana, this is a land of opportunity. If you're willing to get an education, if you're willing to work hard, they should believe like my father did over 40 years ago. If I can make it to Louisiana, if I'm willing to work hard, I can have a great quality of life. I can pursue my dreams. And that's what we're here, that's the whole reason we're starting this session. I look forward to working with you to make sure that every child in Louisiana is able to pursue their dreams, pursue the American dream in this great state. God bless you, God bless the great state of Louisiana, God bless these United States. Thank y'all very much.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
You've been listening to Governor Bobby Jindal addressing the state legislature at the start of the 2014 session. This is special coverage on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge and WRKF.org. I'm Amy Jeffries here with LSU political scientist Kirby Goidell. The governor in his speech thanked the legislature for passing ethics reform in sessions past, as well as a big income tax cut and the 2012 public education overhaul, and also for the privatizing of the charity healthcare system. And then he turned to economic development, his big topic for this session.
Yeah, I thought it was, I think overall it was a very good speech. He did very much what we would expect him to do. He came out, as you said, he thanked the legislature for their help in passing a number of major initiatives. He's really building up the case for his record overall as he's been governor, why he's been successful, the things that he's been able to accomplish. Then he really hit on the economy, hit very hard on the economy first in terms of some of the numbers. Again, what he's trying to do is trying to connect people to the economy. We know that his approval rating is not where he would like it right now. I think probably his people believe that he's not getting the credit for the economic performance of the state. This is an effort to tie his policy and to tie him personally to what's happening in terms of the economy, and then also to push it further into his workforce initiative.
And maybe perhaps to really drive that point literally home, he brought out a number of people, eight people, who he could point to as beneficiaries of his economic development policies, eight success stories, and that really took up the bulk of his speech. And this was a bit of political theater that we usually see in State of the Union addresses delivered by presidents. But has the governor, Governor Jindal, ever done this?
To my memory, I don't recall him doing that. Now, he may have, it could have slipped up. But I think it was interesting. And you're right, it's eight people. So this is the effort to personalize the statistics. He's known as someone who likes his numbers, who rushes through them, who pushes them out. But this allows him to personalize the success story in the economy in a way by pointing to these individuals and talking about their individual success, and then also pointing to some of the economic development efforts that they've had underway and connecting the individual to the economic development effort, to the economy, and to what's going on in Louisiana. I thought it was fairly effective. I might have gone with, four instead of eight, but that's, that's a preference.
Well, maybe if there's eight, you've got a better chance that you'll be able to relate to one of them.
Yeah, you also need to cover important groups and important industries, and so you're building that storyline of economic success, so you want to make sure you're covering all your bases.
Right, from military veterans to people who are coming from Dubai to work for IBM at a high level in their talent development department.
Yeah, and so you're able to, again, really personalize, show the diversity of the people coming in, show the different industries that you've helped out, show this is a way to showcase your economic record.
Yeah, and in his economic development policies that he's pitching for this session, he really also tried to show a range of ideas there as well. Of course, he mentioned this $40 million fund that he's been talking up to incentivize colleges and universities to partner with private industry in the state for job training. But he was also talking about tort reform. That sort of falls under this same umbrella. So how does that come into play as part of his overall agenda for this session?
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that the tort reform is connected to the levy lawsuit and John Barry and to the efforts there to force the oil companies to pay their share in terms of the cleanup. And there's no question that was a message. He didn't want to get into a lot of the details, so instead he used the language for our economic development, for our economic future. We need a predictable regulatory framework, a predictable legal environment. But the message there is pretty clear that he sees this as a threat, and he's going to support efforts to limit those lawsuits.
Right. There is just to remind folks that there is a lawsuit out there by the Southeast Levy Authority Board East. I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, but the levy authority out of New Orleans that has challenged oil and gas industry over what they say is their culpability for damage to coastal wetlands.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, there is concern, especially from the governor's office, but also from these corporations, that that type of lawsuit is going to cut into corporate profits, or that it may make corporations less likely to invest in the state. You know, I think the people supporting the lawsuit say those claims are overstated. But aside from the issues, it's pretty clear where Jindal is on it and what he thinks the legislature ought to do on this issue. Even though, again, he didn't get into a lot of the details, he's saying very clearly that this is important for economic development purposes.
He also told some of his personal story, which he even said, I don't usually do this. I don't usually tell stories and certainly don't talk about myself. But here he was, you know, bringing up his dad again and his dad's great path to the U.S., coming here as a student and sort of achieving the American dream here in Louisiana.
Yeah, and I think what we hear in that are two things. We know that he has national ambitions, and you see his national, him setting the stage for what a national campaign might look like, a unique sort of story in terms of his family background and his parents coming to Louisiana and developing and his success as a politician, but also then connecting that personal story to the economic story, to the policy story. That's what's really important there, is that it's part of a bigger fabric that he's trying to weave together into one coherent narrative.
Were you struck at all by the fact that he didn't hit hard on his record for education policy and changes there? He mentioned it last week when he was speaking at the CPAC conference and certainly made a point of doing that. School choice was a theme at that conference. This is the Conservative Political Action Conference, which is often a parade of Republican presidential hopefuls, including Governor Jindal. But he didn't really hit hard on that and defending that, although there's quite a bit of legislation both supporting and sort of reenacting certain parts of that, but also trying to pull back as well.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised, because I think he did need to send the message to the legislature and to individual legislators that he's committed to his reform efforts and he will block any effort to undermine what he believes he's accomplished in the past, partly because he does see this as fitting into his presidential ambitions, as being able to point to school choice, being able to point to school reform, being able to point to the teacher tenure changes. And so I am a little bit surprised that he didn't try to connect that in. But in terms of thematically, maybe it was harder to fit in, but he did fit in human trafficking. So
right.
It's curious as to why he left that out there.
Right, and he was talking about job training and his father coming here for school. So it is a little strange that he couldn't sort of weasel that in there somehow or other.
Yeah, and it fits in with the theme of giving every Louisiana child a chance and making sure that they have the opportunity for success.
Right, which is his theme. On many occasions, to sort of give opportunity to those who are interested in taking advantage of it. So how does human trafficking then fit into that theme, or to what he is trying to do in terms of making a case for himself and his legacy?
Yeah, I'm not sure it fits in as easily as in terms of the overall narrative. I think it's an issue that there is no loss on, if you think about it politically. I mean, who can possibly argue against laws to go after human trafficking and to try to take this on as issue? So it's highly symbolic. There's no opposition. So it's a good issue for him in that sense. I'm not sure. It's harder for me to fit it into the overall theme of economic success and economic development and personalizing that story.
There were a couple of other initiatives that he has put his name next to for this session that he didn't mention. Three proposals, I think, to support veterans, and also some proposals to further restrict abortion. He didn't mention either of those.
Yeah, he mentioned at some point, he said something about protecting life, but it was a very sort of vague reference and not a specific, not a here are the things that we want to do. And so I think it was... I'm not sure why he didn't get more specific on that in terms of the support for his legislative proposals, because that's where the details can fit in.
Of course, one of the purposes of this speech is to reach out to the lawmakers in the chamber. It's filled with lawmakers. The full House and Senate are there. It is one of the rare occasions when both sides of the legislative state house get together and hear a clarion call to them all. And so it's his opportunity opportunity to say, hey, thanks for what you've done in the past, and would you please do this also this time? Did he accomplish that with this speech? Did he sort of make enough inroads with his allies and those who might be critical or scrutinizing him at this moment?
Well, I don't think a speech is as helpful for that as personal connection and personal touch and personal communication. And so I don't think the speech offended anyone. I don't think anyone left, angry with him or upset with anything that he said in this particular speech. Some people may have been shaking. I assume his political opponents, the Democrats in the chamber, were shaking their heads about some of the things that he said and reacting to it. But I don't think he. I'm not sure that he helped himself a lot. I'm sure he didn't hurt himself. So in that sense, I would say it was more neutral than a positive. I do think it was overall a good speech. He has a delivery, though, if I'm going to pick on a delivery point, where he doesn't always pause to allow reaction from his audience. And I think there were some points in that speech. There was some clapping, but I think a little bit of a better delivery to really emphasize the point and allow the chamber to respond might have helped it come across in a more effective way.
Leave room for the applause lines.
Yes.
To get
yes.
their applause.
Yes.
Right. Well, the legislature has convened for the 2014 session. Governor Bobby Jindal has delivered his speech outlining his agenda, which is going to be headlined by workforce development, job training, et cetera, tort reform being part of that as well. And you've been listening to special coverage of that here on 89.3 WRKF. I'm Amy Jeffries here with Kirby Goidell. And just as we wrap up, what is the moment that you will sort of remember most from this speech? What do you think is going to end up kind of coming back and being quoted by the governor or others as we move into this session?
Yeah, I think mostly it's about tone, mostly it's about theme, mostly it's about this is a governor at the point in his term where he wants people to connect what he's done and he's building his record of accomplishment so he can say, my governorship has been successful. This state's better off because I've been here and we moved the state in the right direction. I think the key line in there, which I think his opponents will tear apart, is now we have more people, we have higher income, and we have more jobs in the state. I think that will be closely looked at and argued over how true that is. But I think that's the key. He wants to make that connection to we are doing better today than we have in the past. And it's connected to the things we've done, going from ethics reform to school reform to tax reform to across the board his record.
Traditionally, the Democrats will run out to the steps of the State House and deliver their response to the governor's address, assuming there's a Republican governor, as we have now. To give their response to the governor's address to the joint meeting of the legislature. And surely we'll be hearing coverage of that later on today here on WRKF and also tomorrow morning in Capital Access, our regular Capital coverage that we have on a daily basis here during the session. But the other thing that you did mention, just to sort of close us out here, is that, you know, the governor needs to go and do that personal touch. That has been something that in past years he has done in advance of the session starting going and sort of bolstering support, gathering support for his main initiatives. He hasn't done that much this year. He's been out of the state. He's been touring, perhaps more in light of his national ambitions.
Yeah, if you want legislative accomplishment, you need the personal connections. You need to call people on the phone. You need to have lunch with them. You need to have more of those personal contacts. Speeches like this are great. They're important. They matter. But the personal connections that governors make outside of the speech, that's much more important in terms of getting things done.
Well, we'll see if he can make catch up now. This is 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge and WRKF.org. I'm Amy Jeffries. Thanks for listening.